Is this Christmas?
Yes, we're doing a special Christmas everywhere all at once.
Oh, God!
Ham and cheese toastie and a pumpkin latte?
Who are you?
Wrong room. We are on a top secret mission.
What?
Who are you then?
Joy.
Top name Joy?
Thank you.
How do I get to be you? You'll find out.
Who are you?
You'll find out.
What do I do? Where do I go?
We'll find out.
Oh, do you see? You have to be mysterious all the time. That's why everyone leaves you. That is why you were always alone.
I promise this to keep.
We can do this.
What was the biggest mystery in the known universe?
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this festive episode by welcoming back Clarence Brown. Mr. Brown, how are you?
I am doing quite well, man. As always, glad to be on with you guys to talk about Doctor Who.
Indeed.
Merry Christmas to all.
Yes, indeed. And it would not be a festive episode. It wouldn't be an episode of Doctor Who or Discussing Who without the one and only Santa Claus himself, Lee Shackelford. Mr. Santa Shackelford, how are you?
My belly like a bowl full of jelly. Yes. No, I have to mirror Clarence's statement. I'm just glad to be here with you guys. I've had a very Merry Christmas, and for the people who are looking at this on video, I'll show you. Proverbially, one of the worst things you can get for Christmas is socks. But my wife gave me these socks that have Godzilla breathing fire on them. And on the top, it says emotional support animal.
Oh.
That's my... Gojira is my emotional support animal. I love them.
And let me give a quick plug. Go watch Godzilla Minus One. I think it's on Netflix.
Yes.
Wonderful movie.
G-Minus One is indeed awesome.
Mm. So... Lee Shackelford, while I've got it with you, there is something that you like telling people, and I would like to share that Christmas gift that you like telling. So what is that?
Well, it's a gift that people give to us. We appreciate that you've got other things you could be doing, but you're choosing to spend this time with us. And thank you so much.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And hello to Wynn Grace and Tasha in the chat. Thank you both for being here. You both have been an awesome presence with us as we've gone live in 2024, and you've helped me be more comfortable going live. So thank you both for being here and religiously being here, faithfully being here. We very much, and I very much, all of us appreciate both of you. So kudos to both of you. And Clarence, there is something you also like telling people. And what might that be?
Of course, that is that you can support the show by subscribing, leaving a review, or telling a friend. If you have a review idea or anything else you want us to know, Doctor Who related or otherwise, please send that in to discussingwho@gmail.com or hit us up at discussingwho on most social medias.
Indeed, indeed. Mm.
We don't say all anymore because we
X'd some things. Just saying. But I will say, for anyone who is currently listening to us in the audio feed, I am doing minimal edits on this episode to get it out as quickly as possible. So some of the background noises that you may hear, you're going to hear them where you might not have heard them before because of minimal edits. That
he means his neighbor's dog.
His neighbor's dog, possibly.
Could be.
You know, they take a lot of barking, so who knows? But that being said, one thing that I do know is it's Christmas time, and there is a movie that I have been obsessed about over the last couple of weeks. I had never read the book. I've talked about it each week on Discussing Trek that we've recorded. And I just want to share, if you have not seen this movie yet, I am obsessed with the song defying Mavity.
We're finna get pulled.
I just love it. I'm not playing it, but I'm just telling you, I love the song.
Because that's not
defying Mavity.
Yeah, as it exists in the Doctor Who universe.
Yes.
Okay.
So see, I crossed the boundaries of time and space, went to the Doctor Who universe, and defied Mavity. All right. So really, really quick, since this is the festive season, before we get into it, the War Games in Color, have any of you heard any tidbits about it? Lee, I see you shaking your head. Thoughts?
I was just reading a review from some of our UK friends, because we don't really have access to it yet, do we?
I don't believe so. We've got clips on YouTube.
Okay, yeah. And they really do look good. They are just, some of what I've seen is just stunning. And what I'm hearing from our UK friends is that it is just a beautiful thing to behold. That they did cut it way, way down. You know, it's a 10-episode serial. And they just said, you know, it makes a very coherent, fast-moving story when you cut it way down. And, but they just are really happy with the image quality. Some people, I read somebody saying, sometimes the people's faces, they look a little like, you know, they have been prepared by a taxidermist. But, you know, but we are... You're retconning color into this black and white image, and it's that's always problematic. So they're saying, but you know, that's our only complaint. That generally speaking, it's just. And then when spoiler, Time Lords turned up at the end, their robes we always thought were black and white, they are blue and white. They're royal blue and bright white, and they just said it's just stunning, just that moment. So things like that. It's just great stuff.
So I'm assuming they also upscaled and brought it up to 4K quality.
Yeah, some of the close-ups that I've seen are just like, wow, that looks like that was shot yesterday.
I wonder if they're using some AI stuff in there to kind of...
I think they must have. There's got to be something interpolating those distances, because it was shot in extremely low res.
Yes.
I mean, there's a makeup effect. I remember that somebody's got a scar going through his eye. And the whole effect of his scar is literally something taped over his eye. Mm. And people said that in broadcast, that looked fine. But even me watching it on my computer to monitor, I thought, whoa, that's a regrettable. He's got a big piece of tape over his eye. And I haven't seen that moment in the upscale, but I have to think they must have done
something.
I would imagine they've done something to that, to deal with the fact that it was originally shot in 12-line television and people were watching it on screens this big. And
yes.
I don't know.
Well, considering watching it and things done to their faces, and I don't want to give too much of a spoiler, but you know, in the scene where the doctor is being forced to regenerate and they give him the option to choose his face, have either of you seen what they did there?
Don't spoil it, because I have no idea. And I've never seen the War Games. So.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
If you haven't seen the original,
Okay, well, let me just say that spoilers.
He just said don't do it.
No, I'm just saying spoilers. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, so, okay.
And it's not River Song. I'm just going to say spoilers, because they did something, and I thought it was brilliant.
It's not
going
to be like Matt Smith popping up in An Adventure of Space and Time.
Right.
Uh-oh.
Not saying.
All right. Well, then they replaced Matt Smith with Shooty in the, I don't know.
They did.
Okay.
But he's too old. He's too skinny. That one will never do. I'm just saying.
That's a black woman.
Yeah. Who knows?
Maybe we should review this after we get through the current season of Torchwood.
Maybe so.
Because I really want to see it, for one thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd love for us to talk about it.
Well, really,
it is an interesting story for Doctor Who lore, because there is a character in it who is called the Master. And this was long before there was a character in proper continuity called the Master. So
spoiler,
people looking backwards are saying, is that who that was supposed to
be? Well, maybe based on this iteration, maybe they're looking forward, not necessarily backwards, because not only did they upgrade the colorization, they upgraded the music too.
Oh, cool.
So there are scenes where the war chief and the doctor are talking. And spoiler, I got to give this one away. Spoiler, when the war chief and the doctor are talking, they're playing the sound of drums behind the conversation, which is the master's theme. So I thought that
the decision has been made.
The decision's been made. Exactly. All right. So another thing that came out in the Christmas holiday season was BBC Proms, or with the Doctor Who Proms. Mm-hmm. And Anita Dobson appeared in character. This was hosted by Catherine Tate. But Mrs. Flood appeared in character in the event. She said something quite interesting that I wonder if it tells us something. She said she loves stories. She loves hearing stories. I'm just saying.
She's help me out, because I have no idea what's going on.
I'm wondering if she's the god of stories. And that leads me into the other thing I want to talk about before we get into the episode, which is the trailer. I don't want to go into details into the trailer, but there is an awesome scene in the trailer that looks like they are in a theater. It looks like it's in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and there is a cartoon character that's coming out of the screen and coming, you know, like stepping out of the screen, and in the audience is Mrs. Flood with her spectacles watching what's going on.
Huh.
Just saying.
If it means something, I have no idea what you're talking about, so yeah. Okay. You might have to help us out here.
I'm just saying that she might be the god of stories. That's
okay. All right.
That's it. But back to Christmas. So anything else that you guys have before we get started?
I don't think so. I was kind of a bit anxious to see the trailer for next season, and glad that, you know, we actually got a few scenes of what's coming. So, they did give me a little bit hype to see what they do with the next iteration here.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I say let's get started. And that means I get to say, for everyone listening or watching, and if you have not seen Joy to the World, the 2024 Christmas special of Doctor Who, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review Joy to the World. This is the 2024 Christmas special of Doctor Who, first airing on the 25th of December, 2024. It starred Shuti Gatwa as the 15th Doctor, and Nicola Coughlan, I believe, as Joy Almondo. This episode was written by Stephen Moffat.
Who?
Summary view, Stephen Moffat. Lee Shackelford, I'll start with you. Summary view, what say ye?
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed this. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this. I just thought it was a entertaining romp. And, I had questions, but it's just nothing that took me out of the story or made me say what right up until the very end. And... I just had a great time. I felt it was what a Christmas special is supposed to be, that it was just a lot of fun and made you think, and you really felt things. I did. How about y'all?
Clarence?
I don't know if it does much to progress the Doctor Who canon or the storyline of Shuti's Doctor much, but what it did do for me was humanizing him a bit in this episode, addressing two characters that seem to be very lonely, and in turn his loneliness as well. So a lot of heartfelt humanizing moments between the Doctor and his companions for this episode. I think I really enjoyed it as far as it being a Christmas episode.
Okay. So before I give my thoughts, Clarence, you said him and someone who was lonely. Who was the person to you who was lonely?
Well, there was a few people. There's Joy. There's Anita. There's also the doctor.
Okay. All right. So
yeah,
I enjoyed this episode, but there was a character that didn't quite resonate with me as much as I wish that the character would have. There was another character that did resonate with me, and I would have loved to have had more of that character. Mm. So I think if that were my only, if I had to give a complaint, that would be my complaint, but it's not really a complaint. It's just a critical observation, I should say, but we will definitely get into it. So Clarence, what were your thoughts? I'm going to give this to you first. What were your thoughts on the time hotel, this concept of the time hotel?
I thought it was interesting. I think there also were some parts of it that didn't really make sense to me. They mentioned something about things being reset. But still, I'm like, okay, you have this hotel where people can go through pivotal moments in time. What if they screw it up? What if they mess up a fixed point that has to happen? What if they do something to screw it up? I didn't really see many safeguards against that. So I think the idea of them going through as viewers, if they would have threw some mechanic in there to say where they can't interact or they just could observe, so like the Christmas ghost or whatever, I think I would have been more on board with it, but it seemed like they were going there and being physically actually there, being able to interact as witnessed by the doctor's year there. Mm-hmm. So it just seems highly problematic from that aspect to me.
Yeah, I did feel like you sort of have to just go with that because, yeah, every time the doctor turned in when he's pretending to be, room service, everybody's surprised to see him. Well, if the idea of the hotel is that you can go open a door and you're at the base camp of Everest in 1953, then they wouldn't be surprised to see him come in, right?
Theoretically, right?
Isn't that sort of what the whole idea is? So, it's another one of those ideas that's fun for an hour, but if you think about it for 2 seconds more,
except for the train, because the thought that I would have on what I'm about to say for the train would be, how in the heck is she going to get out of the train cart that she, the room area that she's in, if what I'm about to say is true. No, but right. This is where Moffitt is doing another Moffittism and taking something ordinary and making it extraordinary, like the statues of angels and making them scary, the darkness and making it scary. You're taking a room that we always see in hotels that's always locked and giving an explanation about it.
That's right.
It's a little weird that the door was always linked. I guess when it wasn't linked, he went outside and saw the brick wall. So it's just kind of confusing on the concept because in the hotel itself, we always see the door. So is it really always linked or is it linked to this moment in time? I don't know.
I think you got it, Clarence. I think that it's linked to that moment in time from the hotel. So that hotel door is, but then I'm just breaking that logic as I'm talking about it, because if it's always linked to that moment in time, then you can only use it once, theoretically. Mm. Right?
Maybe. Because if it's that moment in time, yeah.
But maybe it's not that moment in time.
That's true.
It's that it progresses. Who knows?
But well, I started to say, just in the Time Hotel, they didn't have a door that opens into Christmas 2024. But if they didn't, then how did the manager come through with the Villengard briefcase? Never mind.
Maybe he had it for 2024 for that hotel. Because remember, the doctor had to go to New York City for 2025 to get into the Exeter, which was a completely different hotel, to get into the door to get back. And it was across the hall.
Mine does too.
Yeah, even if it was locked to a particular moment, which I think that's what we're kind of getting at, that is locked to a particular moment, then wouldn't you see the other people that went in there before as well each time you go?
Right. So
you'd end up with a traffic jam of tourists who were all in there at the same moment. Yeah,
which is what happened when we got the two doctors. He went in there and saw himself locked in that moment. But we should also see the other myriad of people that come to the hotel to experience the moment as well. So,
why doesn't that happen to anybody else? Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go back a little bit. Stick with the doctor, but go back a little bit before we see the two doctors, which I absolutely loved. But before we see the two doctors together, we see him with the coffee cups getting out and going to get milk. Mm-hmm. Lee, what did you think of the scene where he's literally being domestic, going and getting milk
very casually? Yeah, I really like that whole scene because it's a part of a longer sequence of him being basically on autopilot. Like, he's just being a creature of habit. So he goes out to get with two mugs, and he, once Trev challenges him about it, he kind of looks at the mug like, oh yeah, I'm traveling alone now, but I came out here with the two mugs. And then later on, he puts on his coat and he gets his Sonic. I was like, why am I doing this? I just thought that was very interesting.
So Clarence, what do you think? Why did he get his coat and the Sonic?
Well, obviously because he saw the briefcase, but I do like the idea of him locking onto fresh milk and just like going to the closest location where that's available. One thing that did confuse me again, and maybe you guys can clear it up for me, and maybe I'm just looking into it way too much, because it seemed like the second time that the doctor did grab his Sonic and come back out. And also, didn't the Sonic look a little bit different?
It was red.
Was it a brown? A red?
Yeah, a reddish brown, yeah.
Yeah. So when he grabbed his Sonic, changed the clothes, and went back out, Trev acted as if he didn't see him the first time, to me. Because he asked him, is that a toilet? Again, after he had just asked him that question before he went
That's
in.
That's true.
Yeah, he asked something like, well, that wasn't there before. Or
yeah. I talked to him. Like, what?
That's right.
Did I miss something?
Yeah. You brought up a good point. I'm wondering if that was a bad edit, maybe, or mis-edit or something.
I did wonder about that, too. Yeah.
Because I thought that was a little odd. Or my rational brain kind of said maybe Trev just then figured out that wasn't there before. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. It's confusing.
No, he's already commented on it.
Ah, okay.
I don't.
Wibbly wobbly hotelly welly.
Yeah. Hotelly welly.
So what did you guys, let's stick with the doctor. The doctor goes into the room. He's going into all these different rooms. I'm not quite sure. Well, no, I know what he was looking for. He was looking for the guy with the briefcase, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then he comes upon, the Silurian with the briefcase in Joy's room. This is when he meets Joy. Let me tell you something that I found weird that didn't get an explanation, I don't think, for, but just came off very odd to me. I really like the character Anita, but by golly, she's got a good poker face. Because I'm thinking, if I'm walking in and all of a sudden there's a guy holding, a room service tray, I'm thinking, who the heck are you? And on top of that, there is a lizard man standing in the room. Most characters would be screaming, running the other way. She carries on her business. Why?
I think it's kind of a joke, and maybe it's not carried out well enough to be clear that it's funny, but it's like, the way I read that was, she's seen it all.
Yeah, me too.
There's nothing in this hotel that she has not seen.
All right.
So when Joy says, the flesh will rise, and so on, she says, right.
Yep.
Whatever.
I'm just delivering towels. Have a good night. Bye bye.
Just brought the towels. That's yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's all right. That makes sense. So this is our introduction to Joy. Either of you, take it away. impressions of Joy.
I expected Joy to be more prominent in the episode. It was almost Joy light, kind of. She was very pivotal to the resolution of the episode, of course. But there was a good bit where, you know, she's just not with us. That being said, I thought the actor did a great job portraying the character. I thought there were some great moments between her and the doctor as well. But really, this duo wasn't the part that I really, really loved about the episode.
Hmm. Lee, what about you? What were your thoughts of Joy?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It does seem like she's almost underused to be our special guest star. We spend a lot more time with Anita, right?
Yeah, it seems so. I don't know if that's true on paper, but...
Yeah, but my golly, with that moment where the doctor is trying to piss her out of being controlled by the briefcase...
Mm.
That's you without makeup. Watch that actor's face. I just thought it's such a sweet face. And what she gives us is this tragedy of her whole life. And it's really an extraordinary little performance without her saying a word.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's fantastic. So I really appreciated her. But yeah, very often she is like in that first confrontation with the doctor is sort of like, hey, I'm here. I'm standing right here. And the rest of the story is going on past me. Like, hey. Mm. So anyway.
You know, I think, and this is going to be my, again, only constructive criticism of the episode. Mm. I think they've cast a well-known British actor that is known for her comedic roles that she's done. She unfortunately was cast in an episode where her character, in my opinion, was more plot device than substance. For the most part, unfortunately.
She is there to drive the story.
You know, she's Joy. Yeah. And what Joy to the world will eventually at the end become, she is a plot device. And I guess you could say Anita is the same thing. She's the plot device that gives the doctor something to do for that year. You know, if I want to look at it equally the same, but for some reason, Anita resonated with me so much better in the time that we got with Anita than the time we got with Joy. Why do you guys think that is?
I think a lot of it is in the script because it seems to me like if this story has an impact on the doctor's life, I think it is that he's going to go. He realizes how lonely he is.
Yes.
He has already shouted at himself, "Do you know how alone you are?" Which is, I think, is a great moment. And Joy encourages him to go find a friend. But those game nights once a week with Anita, I feel like that's what has changed him. And so, yeah, why isn't she the center of the episode? What?
Mm.
Yeah, no.
And why wasn't she given in the billing and like this image that we have in front of us? Why don't we have Joy? And I think I might would have liked Joy a little bit better, but it's almost like the character that I really liked is not even in the promos. You know, I mean, you know, that's nothing to do but marketing, but who knows?
Yeah, and you get to see the doctor in these mundane circumstances, you know, just sitting around playing games on game night with his friend, being a waiter, using the psychic paper to predict people's orders. It was so much fun in seeing him just, as he says, just be normal, take the long way around, live life day by day sequentially. I think there was a lot of good in seeing the doctor do that. And it made me think, is David Tennant's doctor out there doing the same thing?
Bingo.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yep. You know, I didn't like him saying that he's never done that before, because I'm thinking, well, you know, 14 did that, and that's how you were healed. So you know, I didn't quite like that line, and I didn't like where he brought up not having a chair, because in the 60th anniversary, he's the one who told 14, you know what you really need here is a chair. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like he didn't listen to himself, literally.
Yeah.
So maybe his timelines were out of sync. He didn't retain it. I don't know.
Yeah. And also sometimes we give ourselves good advice that we don't follow. So
that's true too.
I'm willing to buy that.
But real quick, back to Joy, real quick, Wynne Grace makes an excellent comment. He says, Joy's time was also split between her real self and the possessed self, but we barely knew who Joy was to fill off, you know.
And sometimes it was changing from moment to moment, which I think the actor succeeded in doing. But yeah, I think Wynne Grace's point is still good. It's like, yeah, but we don't really know who she was. So,
So the star seed will bloom and the flesh will rise.
That's it. Yeah.
So we've got this thing that's going to blow up, and it's another landmine, but it's in a briefcase, and it's going to blow up, destroy everything, become a star. Thoughts?
Well, that's a very effective weapon. And they're saying that it's a power source, and that's certainly also true too. All stars are power sources. But what I really loved about this was that once it gets seeded where apparently it's supposed to go, 65 million years in the past, then we hear from Trev later on that meanwhile he's been in there monkeying with the circuitry, monkeying with the programming. So
yeah,
it's no longer a threat. It's just going to be a star, and we're going to get it safely away. And that's a great thing that we're going to add another star to the heavens. So I thought that was unexpected, and I thought that was a lot of fun.
Mm. Yeah. What did you think, Clarence?
All the same things that Lee's saying. I think the idea of having to come up with a mechanism to push this thing so far in the past where it can mature naturally was an interesting sci-fi idea. And the way maybe the timing is exactly in the 4204 or 02 is when it matures or whatever. Maybe that might be a little weird, but I thought it was, what 4202? Because it was when they went through the time portal to that tomb or whatever is when it matured. Yeah. So who knows when it was.
Right.
But ultimately, I did think it was an interesting idea to send the weapon back to mature. I thought that was pretty fun. I like what Trev did to reprogram it, but I think I may be a little confused on the whole becoming the Bethlehem star part.
So let's just, before we get to Bethlehem, let's just talk about the idea of it being this villain guard, which the last time we've heard of villain guard was in Boom. You know, so this is a recurring villain, it seems to be. We saw it back in 2005. We've referenced it in, last year or this year, and then we'll, I'm sure, see it again next year. But we've got this device, and what possesses Joy? I know we've talked about her being possessed, but what makes her decide on her own off screen to take this thing and merge with it, I'm assuming?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Some way.
I had sort of the horrifying visual for a minute that she ate it.
it's
like all Superman. Off camera, so we don't. Yeah, so we kind of what happened exactly doesn't matter. But she talks to the sentience that's growing inside the star, and I don't know if the telepathic bond is still there, and she's learned something vital from it that they now feel a kinship and they share their loneliness.
Okay.
I mean, is Trev in there saying, this is going to be fine. In fact, you could really help right now. And it'll be wonderful.
Mm.
I don't know.
Clarence?
I feel like that somehow Joy and the bomb was still linked, even though she got separated from it temporarily. I feel like she was still linked to it somehow. And I'm trying to square that against how all the other people who were linked dusted away. So maybe she had just fate was she had to die. I hate to put it that way, but
well, all the others did, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Or did they? Did they assume that they were dying and then they were just transmutated, merged, and turned into energy, maybe?
The hologram showed us all the others. Yeah, they're all in there. So,
So, you know, was this just part? We assume that when they sparkled away that they had been disintegrated. Maybe they were just merging with the sentience or whatever. I don't know. So let's go back. We see her go and she becomes the star. We see a small little mini cameo of Ruby Sunday. So we know that Ruby's coming back next season. We see her in the Christmas episode briefly, you know, she's back, still not completely gone. And then we see 0001 Bethlehem. Clarence, I'll give it to you first. What you think?
I don't think the date itself bothered me as much as probably, and I know Lee will have a lot to say on this because we're always talking about Doctor Who and religion and how it's portrayed within the confines or the canon of the show. As far as just merely a Christmas story, I think the sentiment was there that, there's the Star of Bethlehem. Yeah, I think that was kind of cool. But again, like with all things, if you dig into it too much, you might have a few issues. But I think for what it was trying to do, it was kind of a good moment.
All right. Lee, what do you say?
Yeah, and I don't disagree that I think she's Joy, and she literally becomes the Star of Bethlehem. And it moves the Doctor to say, Joy to the world. It's, you know, it's a lovely idea as an affirmation of Christian theology, which has up to this point been outside of Doctor Who canon. But as I saw somebody on a YouTube say earlier, wow, they've just made Jesus part of Doctor Who canon. How about that? And you'll remember earlier, the 10th Doctor told us that the reason there was no room at the end is because he took the last one. So he's had different views about that event in the past.
Well, he could have still taken the last room and still been
the 10th Doctor's down there messing things up right now.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like in the beginning of this episode when we're in London during the Blitz. I said, if you look closely at those barrage balloons out there, Rose Tyler's hanging from one of those ropes. So we have to remember all these things are happening simultaneously. But no, I was more bugged by the idea that this is happening in the year one right now, because I just think that's ignorant of how numbers work. And that's what bugs me about the Mavity joke, is Isaac Newton didn't coin the word gravity, for God's sake. And so this is the same thing. And Bible scholars will tell you that if you're following the rest of Matthew and Luke, then you'll know that to jibe it with Roman history, Jesus was born in the year 4 BCE. So in the year 001, he's 5 years old. So, it's like commit.
We
don't start counting years with one. We count with zero anyway. Yeah.
But that being said, being in Mississippi and being Southern, being raised Southern Baptist, there are plenty of people out there who think, well, when Christ was born, that's when it went from BC to, even though you...
That's right.
That's people who think that.
We believe that people at the time said, well, I guess it's the year one now.
Yes. Well, shouldn't it be the year zero, theoretically?
Exactly. In the first place, it should be the year zero. And Yeah, and in the Roman Empire, they said it's, you know, the whatever year of the reign of Tiberius. That's what year it was, you know.
So
anyway,
my thoughts on
I get the poetic point. It's the year one. It's the beginning. I get that. Yeah. You know.
Well, regardless of the year, yeah. My thought of including Bethlehem, personally, I had no problem with it. I figured in my mind of minds, and that's where I decided to stay off social media with Doctor Who social media this week, was because I didn't want to hear about it. That was just another something for the negative to latch on to. And I didn't want to hear that, but I think I've even probably mentioned this on this podcast before. I read a Wonder Woman novel a long time ago that she is talking to someone about religion, and this person was Christian. She, you know, of course, worshiped the Greek gods.
Yeah.
And she made a comment that, if who created them? In other words, there's a higher power than the Greek gods and who created them. So it married everything from Christianity and the Greek together as being a more higher power than the Greek gods.
Yeah,
and
God of gods.
I used that same mentality for this. This, you know, if you want to put a religious spin on it, this was God's way of making sure that star was there to lead them where they needed to go.
Right.
You know, it didn't say how the star got there. The star was there. So.
That's it. And it turns out it was a woman named Joy. You can't beat that. Yeah.
And she gave joy to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, gentlemen, do either of you have any other items on your list? I have one more. But do you have any more items before we get into our finals?
I got a raft of them. How about you, Clarence?
Go.
I'll go really quick. I like that the doctor was getting his toy TARDISes from online. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes.
And then
he
left a needle one. It was pretty cool as well. Yeah. So, that was sweet.
And some of them were probably made by Amelia Pond.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
And he made her car bigger on the... the car now takes it where she needs to go, not where she wants to go. And it's blue. That was cool.
TARDIS blue. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Microwave is bigger also.
On the, yes. And so are his coffee
his mugs. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Lee, what about your list?
You could call this a pedantic quibble, but... that's Everest base camp. That's Sir Edmund Hillary, and they're about to climb Everest to be the first. Well, one of those men is Tenzing Norgay, who was Nepalese. And I kind of blinked at the very Anglo casting of those men in the tent. I'm like, which one's supposed to be Tenzing Norgay? I don't know. It just felt like a little bit of whitewashing there, which is really astonishing on this show. So aren't you supposed to be woke? Anyway,
they were taking a nap at the moment.
They
had eaten too much turkey for Christmas dinner, and they were taking a nap.
The antidote to wokeness is tryptophan. the toilet plunger joke. I watched this twice,
that was cool.
And I got the joke the second time. I was really amazed that I missed it the first time. That's
good.
Really funny. I like that a lot. I just have a note that says God of Miss Marie Gold. Because I just thought this is a spectacular score once again. Sheesh. And I know the bootstrap paradox is here again. And you know, there's no way you can get around this hurting your head, but the number 7214 literally came out of nowhere. I'm willing to buy that, but the doctor who waited for a year to come into the room to say it has already said it. And he's the same person, so he would remember it being said. Then what is the waiting a year for?
But he didn't know it until it was said.
Oh, he really...
He waited... Right? He waited a year to go to New York to get come through the portal at the hotel in 2025.
But he didn't know it until he came into the hotel and said it.
But he said it a year ago.
It's sort of kind of wibbly wobbly
Okay. He knew it before at the beginning of his year. He knew it already because he had told himself.
Yeah.
And he had to wait a year to 2025 to come back through the portal to tell himself again.
Right.
Right. But at the moment when he first has to enter the code, he doesn't know it yet.
Oh, okay. No, you're right. I'm confusing which of them is which.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But it did come out of
Tasha's though. Giving us thumbs up here. Okay.
And
I
have to give credit to whoever directed that. They did an excellent job of making sure you saw it from the perspective, same scene, but you saw it from the perspective of which doctor it was.
Yes, I noticed that, yeah. It's over different shoulders each time. Yeah.
And they threw in a glance at the chair as well. I thought was real cool.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because that chair didn't mean anything to him before. Yeah, I love that. My only other note was about script, too, and something that I really admired, that we've got plenty enough story to sustain suspense and danger and all the things that we need about this briefcase. But sometimes the twist is not at the end, but at 39 minutes and 45 seconds, when a flipping great T-Rex swallows the all-important briefcase 65 million years ago. What are you supposed to do about that? And I did not see that coming. And I love that. It's like, well, what do we do now?
Yeah.
And that's, right at three quarters of the way through the story. I just, as a screenwriter, if I had a hat on, I would take it off. I said, brilliant.
Brilliant.
That's just, I love that so much. So anyway.
Now, did we know what the doctor was attempting to do when he was running the rope through the train, through the different scenes to the star?
Not until he did it. And I loved that too. I was like, wait a minute. How is that going to? Oh. The door that leads to the altar is inside the Orient Express, right? Because you can go from there into the hotel.
Yes.
So the rope is tied onto the altar. So the Orient Express is in motion.
Okay.
So if he ties one of it to the railroad tracks, the very forward motion of the Orient Express is going to yank on that door.
Okay.
I thought, wow.
That's hurting my head.
Yeah, I'm still confused.
Well, that's it. You have to believe that you could open a door in a hotel and
so here's the real answer to that. Yeah. We're coming up with a very convoluted, timey-wimey reason to do a scene that looks really cool of Shuti Gatwa swinging a rope on the top of a train.
Get that too, yeah.
So, that.
Yeah, for me, I thought, that's just going to tear up the train. Oh, no, it isn't tied to the train. Oh,
yeah, because it's stretched across the hall.
Right.
So okay. That rope literally existed in two times at once.
Yes. At least two. Yeah. It was in 1962 on the tracks and in 001 on the other end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we got an Everywhere All at Once call out in this episode.
Oh, cool. All right, so any other items, because I have one more, but any other items before we go to my one more?
Go for it.
We should mention Joy's mother and the use of the COVID storyline. And my question on that is, too soon? COVID? Too soon?
No, because I think it's a little bit... The way they did it, of course, if you went through COVID, you know what COVID is. You could definitely relate it directly to COVID. But I don't think they said COVID directly in the episode. So you really could kind of take that in multiple ways, I would think.
Yeah. I don't think they, you're right, Clarence. I don't think they ever mentioned COVID. You just knew December 2020 and her mother's in the hospital and she's talking to her mother on the iPad. I think you just take the context. And
and they wouldn't let her visit because of their rules. Yeah, that's COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's I've decided to start calling them a rival podcast because I always think that we're the guys who want to try to find the good in everything. And there's another Doctor Who podcast who are determined to just bring the show down every way that they can and endlessly complain about things. Because nobody hates Doctor Who like Doctor Who fans, I guess. But one of the things that somebody in that group was complaining about, particularly about the wokeness of Doctor Who, was that, and then they had to bring up COVID, which, you know, is a woke signal, I guess, of some kind. I don't, anyway, but yeah.
Oh, either
prove turkey. Something. Yeah.
Did you hear me?
Yeah.
I was like, go eat a turkey.
Go eat a turkey. Go back to sleep. But anyway,
that's going to be my new battle cry. Go eat a turkey.
Go eat a turkey.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to eat, but I'm going to ask favorite quote, Clarence, favorite quote.
All right. I'm sure I'm going to botch this, but it's when Anita is talking to the doctor when the doctor is fixing to leave. And he says his life is slightly complicated. She says, oh, God, you aren't married, aren't you? And he says, no, no, it's not that. It's just I really don't live like this one day after the other in the right order. And I always wondered what it would be like. And do you know what it was like? Amazing. Do you know why it was amazing? You. Good stuff there, man.
Yes. Beautiful.
Yes.
Isn't he married?
Spoilers. Well, depending on what time and when time and, you know, is she still on the library shelf or not? I don't know. So Lee Shackelford, favorite quote.
Joy's complaining about the mansplaining going on around her. And the doctor says, honey, the doctor's in the room. It's mansplain central. I like the fact that he owns it, I guess, but
yeah.
Like, yeah. Wow. Is that an understatement for the whole series? You're right. My runner up was, my mission is proceeding broadly as planned. I've exceeded my personal expectations, which is giving me considerable satisfaction and renewed hope for the future. However, I'm dead.
Oh, poor guy.
That's a great line.
Poor guy.
All right, so mine, and you guys, knowing me, you'll know that I immediately attached myself to this one. Evil must logo.
Yep.
I loved that. Evil
sounds
must
like
logo.
Something, this sounds like something Shannon Perry would say.
Yes, it is. Evil must logo.
Evil must logo.
But as much as I love making logos and stuff like that, when they said that, I was like, you know, that's true. Evil does logo. You know, Gated Galaxies, since you brought it up. Anyway, all right, favorite scene, I'll go first. That whole montage of the doctor being normal for a year was my star on the Christmas tree moment. You know, that I could go back and watch over and over. I think the chemistry between he and the other actor, spot on. And I just, it was believable. It didn't seem fanciful. It just worked for me. So that's my favorite scene. Clarence, what's yours?
I think I'm right there with you, man. Anything with the doctor and Anita was fantastic. Loved, loved, loved.
Lee, what say ye?
I loved all that as well, but just favorite scene. Once I figured out what was happening, using the Orient Express and Sir Edmund Hillary's rope to open the altar door, I laughed out loud. I just thought, what fun. I loved it.
All right. Final rating. Lee, what say ye?
I loved it all. I'm giving it 5 pumpkin lattes.
Ooh. Mm. Not a ham and cheese Sammy?
Yeah, and also the ham and cheese toasty.
Okay. Toasty. Thank you. All right, Clarence, what say you?
I'm going to give this 4.5 toy Tardai out of 5.
You know, I'm going to stay right there. You know, I'm just going to keep tradition. I was going to say 4.5, but I usually wind up somewhere in the middle of the two of you. So I'm going to give it 4.75 only because there was no River Song, and this was written by Stephen Moffat. 4.75 evil logos out of 5. There you go.
I love it.
Were you shocked that there was no river in this episode? I know you were pretty much.
I really wasn't shocked. I was hoping I would be pleasantly surprised. Huh. I didn't really think, you know, that there would be, even though I was hoping there would be. But yeah, I just am hoping that one day we will have, you know, more water in the forest as the river and all that good stuff. So that being said, gentlemen, thank you for being here. And one last thing before we go, as of this recording, this won't be episode number, and I should have mentioned this at the beginning. This is the Lee episode.
This is it right here.
Yes, it is. And why is it the Lee episode? It would have normally been. Again, it is not going to be because Wibbly Wobbly Kyle doesn't edit fast enough. It would have been 337, which is leaked on a calculator, turned upside down.
Upside down. Hmm. So something else will be 337.
Something else, something Torchwood. Oh, and okay. Tasha gives 5 out of 5 Silurian managers.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Hmm. Yep. And got to give a shout out to Trev, too.
You know, Yeah.
Good character. Yeah, both of them.
He saved the world.
Right? Yep. All right. Well, for everyone listening, this was our last recording of 2024. If you're watching us live, thank you for being here. If you are listening to us in 2025, thank you for listening. We're glad that you're here. And as I always like to end it, and I'll keep doing, and as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.